This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 27th of March 2026. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 27th of March 2026. Reading today are Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter Keith Vincent, standing in for Steve Russell. The main headlines this week: plan for sports hub scrapped at River Park. Zoo still looking for capybara more than a week after escape. And Chef Luke heading for the MasterChef final. So, Margaret, maybe we have the story behind the first headline, please.
Plan for sport hub scrapped at River Park. Community project unviable after building's deterioration. A bid to redevelop the former River Park Leisure Centre site in Winchester and turn it into a community hub has been withdrawn. Sport Winchester had hoped to create an indoor sports hub on the site, but has now stepped back from the process and is calling for greater collaboration among stakeholders. The group described the decision as reluctant but necessary due to the building's ongoing deterioration, which made it financially unviable. Andy Imon, chairman of Sport Winchester, said, "Sport Winchester has made the reluctant decision to withdraw from the bid process and urges the council to seek a shared community sporting solution. We believe the council should delay the bid submission deadline to facilitate the best possible solution for Winchester. It would be a shame if the costs and risks of preparing independent bids get in the way of finding the most sympathetic solution for this sensitive site of value to the people of our city. Creative community proposals are inherently disadvantaged in commercial asset disposal situations, but it is not too late for a more collaborative approach to ensure that this process does not end without a decision and a positive future for River Park." The group fed back into the local plan that the site should be retained for sport and recreational use, rather than being turned over to commercial development. The view was held up by the planning inspector at the time. They said, at the end of last year, the trustees of Sport Winchester reviewed the old leisure centre as part of the sale process and confirmed that the building has degraded to such an extent that it cannot be reused without significant commercial risk and should be demolished by the council to facilitate a replacement fit-for-purpose facility. Winchester City Council has been running a sales and development process to replace the old River Park Leisure Centre, which has been subject to ongoing vandalism, requiring final bids for the site by April the 2nd. A spokesman from Winchester City Council said, "We were sorry to learn that Sport Winchester would not be progressing to a final bid. The process and timetable for finding an investor for the site have been clear from the beginning, and it is really important that we stick to the published timetable because of local government reorganisation. It is unusual for expressions of interest not to be carried forward into full bids. However, we know from our agent that the interest from others is still strong, so we are optimistic to have full bids returned by the deadline of April the 2nd. Sport Winchester had proposed introducing an indoor sports hub designed to serve local clubs and the broader community. The plans included a sports hall with two netball or basketball courts, multi-use dart studios, music practice rooms, a small dance and music theatre, paddle courts and Pilates studios.
Zoo still looking for capybara more than a week after escape. And there's a picture of a big green clump with an indistinct capybara lying in the middle of it all. Spotted in Twyford, it was. Capybara Samba, remains on the loose more than a week after escaping from a Hampshire zoo. The 9-month-old rodent escaped a temporary enclosure at Marwell Zoo with her sister Tango on Tuesday, March 17th, just a day after arriving from Jimmy's Farm and Wildlife Park in Ipswich. Laura Reed, CEO of Marwell Zoo, said Tango was found hiding nearby and safely returned, but Samba took off on a bigger adventure. We've had several positive sightings over the last few days, all centred around the same area, so we feel we are closing in on her location. We have so far been unsuccessful in retrieving Samba, but it is a waiting game to catch sight of her again and then deploy our teams in getting her safely back home. Sightings have been reported across Hampshire, with one placing her near the Ship Inn pub in Ulsterbury on Wednesday, March 18th, just over a mile from the zoo. The search for missing Samba has been described as like finding a needle in a haystack, with sightings reported as far afield as Stonehenge, around 20 miles away. On Sunday, the zoo said it had received video footage placing her in a waterway between Twyford and Bramberidge Garden Centre. Dog water walker Claudie Paddock spotted Samba, but her dog spooked the animal, which went into the Itchen and swam off. Early on Monday morning, the Marwell team responded to a sighting on a residential driveway in Winchester Road, Fairhope. Since her disappearance, the public and businesses have been using social media to post fake sightings of her at various locations. Over the last week, Samba has done some much-needed retail therapy at West Quay, cheered on an AFC Totten with a pint, found her sea legs at the marina in Hamble-le-Rice. Capybaras are the world's largest rodent, with adults often more than a metre in length, and have become social media sensations thanks to their friendly nature. They are native to South America and are found in places where water is easily accessible. Anyone who believes they have seen Samba is urged to contact the zoo on a dedicated 24-hour hotline at 07436 167401. I'll say that again. 07436 167401, rather than approaching her. Callers are asked to send a photo and either a Google Maps pin or a what three words location to assist the search team. And there she is in the middle of the green clump, looking quite indistinct. I've never known what a capybara is before.
And here we have Chef Luke heading to MasterChef Final. A head chef from Winchester is steaming through a popular BBC cooking programme and has made it to the finals. Luke MS, head chef at the Wickham Arms in Kingsgate Street, has been competing on MasterChef The Professionals and will now go head-to-head with three other contestants on Thursday, March the 26th, to win the trophy. The early rounds of the show saw Luke move comfortably through skills, tests and invention challenges before he hit his stride in Knockout Week and beyond, where judges praised his calmness under pressure. So far, Mr. MS has created dishes including a goat's cheese mousse and a molten chocolate tart with oat crumble, which requires a very specific and complex bake. He also made a pea custard tart paired with braised lamb, fresh salad, truffle honey and sheep's yoghurt, which proved a huge success with the judges. Luke said, "I felt the whole challenge has been a great opportunity to grow and learn, and every challenge had a different lesson. But if I had to choose one challenge I could start again, it would be the dessert round with the pistachio cake." In the latter half of the show, as you progress, the challenges come at you hard and fast, and finding practice spaces proves very difficult. Also, in the MasterChef kitchen, you're being judged by Matt, Monica and Marcus. But once the show is aired, you are being judged by your peers, friends, family and the nation. Oh, that is a scary thought, going into each challenge and not knowing how you'll perform. I want to keep pushing myself and not just settle with what's comfortable or enough. I like to push myself out of that comfort zone, as that's when I grow and develop the most. I'm still at the Wickham Arms, and I'll keep pushing my food there and hopefully elevate our dining experience even further. I've no grand plan. I've definitely not got it all figured out. Let's just see what comes next. Mr. MS has served as head chef at the Wickham Arms, a Fuller's pub with two AA rosettes, for 6 years. Luke is best known for his innovative creations that bring an elevated and refined element to a classic British pub menu. His appearance on MasterChef The Professionals has shone a light on his culinary talent and his commitment to reimagining traditional British dishes. In celebration, the Wickham Arms is planning a series of special tasting evenings. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Luke MS whisking eggs, clearly on the MasterChef programme in his MasterChef top. And he is apparently only 33 years old.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, then Christian comment, letter to the editor, Chronicle editorial comment, first person and Belgarum. We start with the death announcements this week. Arnold, Pete Arnold, known as Freddy, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 18th of March, aged 62. Kaplan, Michael John Kaplan, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 25th of February, aged 89. Edwards, John Michael Edwards, died peacefully at home on the 20th of February, aged 79. Frey, Dorothy Joan Frey, died peacefully on the 14th of March, aged 106. Gordon, Robert Michael Gordon, died peacefully at St. Catherine's View Care Home on the 4th of March, aged 89. Hobbs, Joy Hobbs, died peacefully at home on the 2nd of March. Lee, Eric Lee, died peacefully in Taunton, Somerset on the 24th of February, aged 100. And Mr. Lee was the Emeritus Professor of Physics at Southampton University and a long-term resident of Courtney Road in Winchester. Leebrook, Claire Leebrook, died on the 28th of February, aged 58. Parsons, Yvonne Ann Parsons, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 20th of March, aged 81. Savage, Teresa Mary Savage, died on the 10th of March. Sergeant, Jean Sargent, died peacefully at the Countess of Brecknock Hospice on the 14th of March, aged 95. Thomas, Robert John Thomas, died on the 25th of February in Cornwall after a long battle with cancer. And Viney, Irene Ann Viney, died at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 7th of March, aged 91. Now we continue with Christian comment read by Jane, please.
And a Christian comment this week is Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor at the Winchester Vineyard Church, writing about cultivating resilience. Those who are resilient always win, according to Bear Grylls. Grylls is best known as a charismatic, larger-than-life entertainer who blends real survival skills with TV drama. While I don't possess his physical toughness or especially share his adventurous spirit, I have found that his observations on resilience are a game changer. Hearing him on the High Performance podcast, I had to stop and pull the car over so I could pause and rerun the audio and write down exactly what he was saying. Resilient people outperform talented people 100 to 1. Bear talked about how the people who were thought of as superstars at school often really struggle in their grown-up lives. It was true in my day that school tended to celebrate people who were talented in sport, arts, or academics. And it's also true, as Bear points out, that life doesn't care if you're quite good or quite clever or quite good-looking. and that the currency of everyday life is the inner muscle of resilience. And the resilience muscle doesn't grow much when life comes easy. As parents, it's so tempting to step in and fix things when stuff goes wrong for our kids, but resilience grows through overcoming difficulty. Sometimes the best thing we can do, as long as it's safe, is to actually let them struggle and experience the consequences of their actions, or even worse, of other people's actions. As a pastor, I regularly share with folks who are experiencing very difficult situations in their lives. Sympathy and empathy are both natural responses to other people's discomfort, and so is the desire to do something, anything, to try and fix the problem or numb the pain. And yet it is often in these moments that, painful as it feels, God is close and very much at work. When our son had a difficult time with relationships at school, we supported and loved him as best we could. It was tough to watch him go through it. We comforted him, encouraged him, and prayed for him. But the thing that made the most difference was when he went off with his guitar and just worshipped on his own. He learned to bring his pain to God, and it made all the difference. Just recently, he remarked that although they were really tough, those years helped him grow. They produced character and fruit, which prepared him for life. If you are struggling today, I pray that you know the peace and closeness of God in the midst of your troubles, and that you can also see how he is using this time to shape you. Those who are resilient always win.
Thank you, Jane. Then we move on to letters to the editor, Margaret.
And this is a letter from Michael Fielding, Oldest Bookshop. It was pleasing, but not a surprise, to see your article of March the 19th, in which P&G Wells had been crowned the best bookshop in the southeast. In my 15 years as a local tourist guide, the shop was always mentioned during a lovely walk, which included Abbey Gardens, the Weirs, the Bishop's Palace, Winchester College, Jane Austen's house, and then P&G. The walk would continue under Kingsgate, the inner close of the cathedral, and then finish at the tomb of Thomas Thatcher, near the west end of the cathedral, inspiration for the formation of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would start by saying that the bookshop was the oldest in the country and wait to be challenged. The usual challenges were Blackwell's in Oxford, founded 1879, and Heffer's of Cambridge, founded, I think, in 1876. No comparison then with P&G, which started in 1729. John Smith of Glasgow certainly had a claim to be the oldest, having been formed in 1751. But since the time of my research, the origins of P&G have gone back even further, and that's from Michael Fielding of Cheriton Road, Four Flood, Winchester.
And Ian Tate writes that King's Walk is one of the city's worst buildings, and there's a picture of it above. It doesn't look too bad to me. Last week, he says, I addressed the City Council's Cabinet Committee regeneration meeting regarding the Central Winchester regeneration proposals. I raised the issue of the retention of what I consider to be one of Winchester's worst buildings, King's Walk. I acknowledge that the ground and first floors of these, these five-storey buildings house some of excellent local businesses, but that didn't alter the fact that it would be a blessing to see the back of it and its replacement with a much higher quality structure. To my absolute shock, Matt Woolgar of Jigsaw, who is heading the redevelopment of the area, defended the retention of the building because of its environmental impact. He said that the embedded cardon should be left locked in the building. He then sheepishly went on to say that as King's Walk was so big, if it was demolished to make the figures add up, it would need an even taller building to do so. Why wasn't the same environmental argument used for the Friars Gate building, housing Iceland Poundland projects, and the Open House Deli? We are being offered a cheap, low-quality scheme that won't reflect Winchester, and as for the 12 years' wait since the last scheme, was scuppered by our friends in the Winchester Deserves Better movement. Well, we've all been duped, says Ian Tate of St. James's Lane, Winchester.
And here Judith Martin writes, a care home in flood risk zone? It's over a month now since the 12 expressions of interest for the old leisure centre at the River Park were on public display. Winchester City Council is sifting through them, no doubt applying proper due diligence before announcing the result in June. Considering it took from November 2021 to summer 2025 to realise that the University of Southampton was never more than a reluctant partner, this looks like unseemly haste. The reason for that is WCC fears losing any receipt it might get to some successor authority pending the massively confusing local authority reorganisation. Maybe not the best way to make a decision. The marketing suggested possible uses might be education, museums, libraries, public halls, places of worship and law courts, all these being permitted by the F1 use class. Hopefully any developer will realise that Winchester has most of them, paid for by public funds, and they mostly struggle. The city doesn't need any more. And William Barrow Simmons, who sold the site to the city for a below-market sum, was adamant he did not want a school. Several of the expressions of interest received said they would look to repurpose the current building rather than demolish it. Perhaps they are unaware of the Urban Explorers video of a few months ago showing the sports floor wrecked by flooding, or of the survey WCC commissioned into the state of the building before deciding to replace it. When the pool was built, a report on recommendations for the foundations, dated June 1966, said, "We assess the extra costs of constructing the building on this site over that of constructing it on an ideal dry site to be approximately £15,000, equivalent to at least £250,000 now, plus construction costs have outstripped general inflation. WCC acknowledges it is a difficult site to develop. There's apparently one developer who thinks the site would be perfect for a care home. Not only have homes around the district closed in recent years, the site is in a Category 3 flood zone, the highest risk, as anyone who's walked there in the winter would guess. WCC voted to spend £130,000 on marketing River Park. How much did the university's Southampton debacle cost? To counter the risks that benefit will not be achieved from the WCC paper, the council will employ a suitable, qualified consultant. Oh, if only they'd thought of that before." And that was from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And this is a letter from G.N. Barrett about salinisation plants. "The water companies are hypocritical and are not concerned about the public. They now say their treatment plants can't cope with heavy bursts of rain, so they are building another holding bay to accommodate this. Yet they still allow farmland for reservoirs, which will be white elephants due to less rainfall and increasing food costs. Why don't they build salinisation plants and more treatment plants to cope? They acquired some of our taxes as they mismanaged their profits, and we have to pay for it again by increasing charges. I can't see why no one lost their positions due to these diabolical acts." And this is from G.M. Barrett of Nicholson Place, Alsford.
Derek Palmer writes, "Why close the station? I moved to Winchester last September, excuse me, following retirement, and for several reasons, I decided to forego a car in favour of bus travel. I'm therefore completely bemused to hear that Winchester City Council is considering demolishing and not replacing our bus station. Having such a hub, which incorporates all local bus services, is, I would argue, a necessity, not a nice to have. As far as I'm aware, the following local towns all have thriving bus stations: Andover, Basingstoke, Eastleigh, Fareham, Havant and Southampton. So why should our city be considering closing ours? That's Derek Palmer, St Cross Road, Winchester.
On the same theme, Mrs. Antonia Mayhew writes, "If it ain't broke..." I refer to the article in the Hampshire Chronicle about the possible and probably closure, and probable I think it should be, closure of the bus station in Winchester, March the 12th. It may well be considered old-fashioned, but it is still a valuable asset and venue. The information desk is manned by kind and helpful staff, and the cafe is cheap and cheerful, a welcome respite for travellers by bus. I am reminded of the American phrase, "If things ain't broke, don't fix it." P.S. They could fix the appalling cracks in our pavements, though. And that was from Mrs. Antonia Mayhew, B.A., Trinity College, Dublin, 1963 to 67, also from the St. Cross Road, Winchester.
A letter from Charles Jennings, sucking the life. The opportunity to comment on or object to the amended planning application for Bushfield Camp and surrounding areas closes on Friday, March the 27th. Over the past 40 years, there have been at least four applications to develop the land. Without a doubt, the current proposal is not only the largest scale, but also potentially the most damaging to the environment, to traffic flows, to the River Itchen, and on the landscape of both the city and the South Downs National Park. The revised plan for Bushfield is not for housing, it is for a solution without a problem. A four-storey hotel and a student accommodation block, 17 buildings rising to 16 metres, 52 feet, including a multi-storey car park for the predicted 4,500 car journeys a day to and from the site. It will suck the life out of the city. 40 years ago, King Charles' assessment of the then proposed extension to London's National Gallery as a monstrous carbuncle on the face of a much-loved and elegant friend caused the original proposal to be rejected, and the development of the current, much more restrained Sainsbury wing of the gallery. The plan for Bushfield deserves similar Anyway, last June, I attended the planning inspector's review of the new Winchester City local plan. It was very clear that the senior planning officers and their consultant had little awareness of the importance of Bushfield in the landscape of Winchester and St. Cross, not to mention the negative impact the proposed development will have for people living in Compton, Oliver's Battery, and those walking on St. Catherine's Hill. I encourage residents to make their voices heard by objecting to the plan and by speaking to their local Winchester City councillors on the plan to damage this site. And that's from Charles Jennings of Stanmore Lane, Winchester.
Nigel Fox writes about Clobber Query. Tom Watson's feature on the curious statue of Sir John Clobbery in the cathedral, Chronicle March the 5th, revives in me a query I've been meaning to clear up for some time. I was once informed by a cathedral guide, actually a former Winchester City mayor, that the term clobber, in the sense of a full, if not excessive, set of clothes and accoutrements, originates with Sir John Clobbery. Unfortunately, this cannot be confirmed by the OED, nor Partridge's Dictionary of Slang and Unconventional English. The latter suggests that the term dates from around 1850, but was popularised by soldiers in the First World War. However, I wonder if there could be some truth in the etymology of the word. The statue itself, admirably depicted with the feature article, certainly shows a knight well encumbered with clobber. It would be satisfying to see a link between this statue inside the cathedral and the bronze First World War rifleman in the close outside. And that's from Nigel Fox, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Simon Lever writes, Ukraine Twin. I am delighted to read that Winchester District and the historic Ukrainian city have agreed to twinning Nizhyn, I'm not sure of the pronunciation. Considering times are particularly challenged, this is a most special, much valued agreement. I have delightful, vivid memories of the Fete of St. Cross, where Ukrainian singers and dancers created a wonderful atmosphere, bringing joy to all. And that was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to editorial comment, please, Margaret.
And this is another about Samba again. Samba is living her best life. Marwal does a fantastic job caring for its animals, but even the best-run homes have the occasional cheeky escape artist. And Samba, Hampshire's newest celebrity capybara, has certainly seized her moment. Since making her break for freedom, this nine-month-old adventurer has become nothing short of a social media sensation. Local Facebook groups are having the time of their lives tracking her imaginary tour of Hampshire, with residents gleefully posting sightings of Samba everywhere, from hotel lounges to high-end restaurants. She's even been papped at Barnaby's in Swanmore, our very own Hampshire Chronicle's Cafe of the Year, where she stopped for a cheeky mid-morning coffee. Not bad for the world's largest rodent. What started as a genuine search operation has turned into a moment of shared joy. In a world that often feels heavy, Samba's escapades have brought a welcome dose of humour, community spirit and creativity. People are swapping stories, sharing memes, and collectively willing this plucky capybara to enjoy her countryside gap year, while also hoping she makes it home safely. And who can blame her for stretching her legs a little? If you were a semi-aquatic South American rodent suddenly presented with the rolling fields, spring sunshine, and riverside retreats of Hampshire, wouldn't you be tempted to linger too? But behind the fun, Marwal's keepers are working to bring Samba back, and they've asked residents to keep an eye out. Any genuine sighting should be reported to the zoo so she can be safely returned to her sister, Tango.
Thank you. Now, Noel, you've got first person.
Please. I have first person by Khalid Aziz. There is still good in the world, he says. What a difference a few weeks make. Last time I wrote from the turquoise warmth of Ras Al Khaimah, part of the United Arab Emirates, on a family trip to celebrate Mrs. A's big birthday. Her toes are fully recovered now, thanks for asking. I was quietly reading in my electronic copy of the Times that Iran was threatening to do some live firing in the Straits of Hormuz, when, from somewhere out to sea, came the muffled crump of some nasty whiz-bang being unleashed. Then a couple of F-15s scraped across the sky overhead. Just a bit of sabre-rattling, thought I. Mercifully, we arrived home just a few days before all hell let loose in Trump's Operation Epic Fury. Not so lucky, a Wintonian friend, who having spent a few days R&R in Dubai with his wife, found himself in the thick of it with Iranian missiles causing rather more damage than the Emirates were prepared to admit, arresting tourists who had the temerity to post pictures of the attacks on social media. Probably not the best way to bolster the reputation as the go-to destination for warm hospitality. Our friends got out only by spending £1,000 on a 10-hour taxi ride to Muscat in Oman, and then shelling out a further £7,000 on two economy tickets back to London via Istanbul. There is no doubt that Iran is an evil regime, but Trump is running them close for that dubious sobriquet. At home, everyone is perturbed about this out-of-joint world, but thankfully, saner voices are beginning to prevail. General Sir Richard Sheriff served as Deputy Supreme Allied Commander Europe, so he knows the Americans intimately. I cannot be the only one who warmed to hear his plain speaking on the BBC last weekend. The so-called special relationship between Britain and America is a fantasy. We have now to look after British interests. Then he dropped his bombshell verdict on the litany of White House stupidities. Trump will go down in history as the predator president. The normally robust and resilient Paddy O'Connell, clutching his pearls, felt that he had to jump in rather nervously with the mealy-mouthed suggestion that there will be others who might disagree with that, I was tempted to shout at the radio, "Name two," outside the White House, of course. I felt O'Connell's pusillanimity came across as a craven bow to the malevolent threat of Trump's billion-dollar lawsuit over Panorama's crass editing of Trump's public utterances around the storming of the Capitol. In my days at the BBC, I'd like to think such bullying lawfare threats would have been treated with appropriate contempt. There are many good men like Sheriff in our country, and they should be listened to, just like my good friend Mirrodin Merv Rees, in whose memory hundreds turned up last Friday at Winchester Cathedral. Based at Basingstoke Hospital, Merv saved thousands of lives with pioneering techniques in liver surgery. This younger son of a Welsh miner, with, in his youth, English as a second language, brought to a sceptical surgical establishment the proposition that there was a safer way of carrying out liver surgery, especially on those with cancer. The big challenge was blood loss. With Merv's techniques, mortality rates dropped from 20% to just 1%. Winchester Cathedral was packed with more than 800 people. Many, like us, were saying a final goodbye as a friend. But as fellow deputy lieutenant to Merv, Alan Titchmarsh, reminded us in his eulogy, others owe their lives to him, quietly confiding, "I am one of them." It was Merv's humanity, not just surgical excellence, that shone through, evidence in his caring bedside manner. He was truly a good man, and such characters must be cherished in these troubled times to give us hope. Callon Eoin Merv, Callon Eoin. I think that's Welsh.
It may well be Welsh. Jane, we have Belgarum.
Belgarum. And Belgarum this week writes about the invisible eyesore. If they were proposed today, there would be howls of protest. The metal railings at Abbey Gardens are splendid, but less attractive are the metal struts that run from the back of the railings, across the stream, and into the embankment on the other side of the watercourse. There are about a dozen of them from the entrance of the park by St John's Almshouses up to the Abbey House. They have been there so long that our eyes have become inured to them. It's a bit like pylons in the countryside. Once the novelty wears off, they somehow become invisible. It's unclear when the struts were installed. They look to have been more recent than the railings, which date from the late Victorian age, when the park was laid out in the grounds of St Mary's Abbey, hence the name. Belgarum doesn't know when the rounded support was installed. There were probably municipal fears about the dangers of the railings collapsing through pressure from the crowds that would gather in the Broadway. And this is accompanied by a very beautiful photograph of the watercourse with on its right-hand side, which is where the buses gather, and hence people might lean under the bus shelters against the fence, and the very attractive old fence along the edge of the pavement. And then behind that is the Abbey Gardens and the toilets at the end, and Abbey House, and the lovely gardens with people sitting on benches, and a more basic fence coming down that side of the stream with lovely spring flowers in front of them. But between the two are these very strong diagonal support struts. Each one has three different support struts running from one side to the other. And suddenly you notice that they are there and distract from the beautiful waterway.
Thank you. Now we start with the announcements this week. And before I do what's on, I should say next week's recording will be actually carried out on Good Friday. So the wallets won't get posted out until Saturday. And because of the bank holiday on the Monday, there may well be a delay in receiving the recordings through your door. That's something slightly beyond our control, I'm afraid, but you should be aware of it for next week. This week we have What's On, and there is an environmental documentary called Joe in the Water. It'll be screened in Winchester at the Ark on Tuesday the 28th of April at 7:30 p.m. And then afterwards there is a question and answer session with Joe Bateman, who was fight against sewage pollution in the is the focus of the film. And we'll also have Pip Piper, the film director, and local actor and angler Jim Murray. If you want more information on that that showing at the Ark on the 28th of April, you can contact the Ark on 01962 398 046, or you can book online on the Ark website. My next, Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 27th of March at 5:53 a.m. and begins at 6:29 p.m. On Wednesday the 1st of April, it ends at 6:42 a.m. and begins at 7:38 p.m. following the time change over the weekend. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with items of general news. Margaret.
Food waste collections. Weekly food waste collections are now in place for every home in the Winchester district. The scheme now covers the entire district following a phased introduction that began in October 2025. Around 60 tonnes of food waste are being collected weekly by Biffa, enough to power six average homes for a year through green energy generation when turned into green energy at the air anaerobic digestion plant. Councillor Steve Cremoyson, Winchester City Council's Cabinet Member for Recycling and Public Protection, said, "I'd like to send a huge thanks to our residents. Most of us are really careful not to waste food, but some waste is unavoidable, and residents across the district are now using the new service to turn things like peelings, chicken or fish bones, coffee grounds or tea bags into energy. We were really pleased to hear that over 90% of those who responded to our recent recycling Looking to the Future survey said it is a simple and convenient process. Each household has received a small grey kitchen caddy, a lockable outdoor bin, and a starter roll of compostable liners. Weekly collections take place on residents' usual bin days. The nine specialist vehicles for food waste collections are fuelled by hydro-treated vegetable oil."
Flying Scotsman on Watercress Line. Crowds gathered near Alresford this month to catch a glimpse of the world-famous Flying Scotsman as it travelled along the Watercress Line. The historic locomotive, one of the most iconic steam engines in the world, drew railway enthusiasts and families eager to see it in action as it passed through Hampshire countryside. The Flying Scotsman continues running shuttle services along the Watercress Line last weekend from March the 20th to 21st, offering more opportunities for visitors to experience the attraction. And there's a big picture of the driver looking out of the cab window and a small picture of the Flying Scotsman and the rest of the train, you know, steaming across Hampshire.
And here we have portraits of judges from the eyes of young artists. Judges have been portrayed through the eyes of students in a new Winchester art exhibition. A new portrait exhibition, Wisdom by Innocence, is currently on display at the Law Courts, offering a fresh perspective on the judiciary through the work of young artists. The project recently opened with a celebration attended by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, the Lord Bishop, the High Sheriff, and members of the judiciary, magistrates, and civic leaders. The project aims to build understanding between children and the justice system while celebrating creativity and expression. The High Sheriff of Hampshire, Sue Elton, said, "This has been a truly inspirational project. Throughout history, we have seen how art is used to communicate. Great portraits of royalty, religious paintings of faith, historical portraits, and even now David Hockney's latest exhibition is of portraits of his older stage carers and spectacle makers. Now we see the judiciary portraits through different eyes, not through legal textbooks or formal sittings, but through the eyes of children. So I want to thank all the young artists, as what they have seen is of value. Judge Angela Morris, recorder of Winchester, said, "As judges, our role involves serving the community and engaging with it. And in doing so, it is important that we take time to remind ourselves of the need to see ourselves as others see us. When I first visited Daphne's studio to see the works in progress, I was blown away by the concerted effort on the part of these students to portray what they saw in the photographs of the judges, but also the interest they showed in the judiciary, including the different roles played by the judges and the way we wear different robes and different wigs. I congratulate all of the students who have taken part in this project, and in particular, the three students who have managed to airbrush out all of my wrinkles and make me look 30 years younger. Yeah. An extraordinary achievement." Art teacher Daphne Vaughan led the children in producing the portraits, drawing inspiration from a quote by Pablo Picasso. "The meaning of life is to find your gift. The purpose of life is to give it away." She said, "Good mental health starts with deep self-understanding, and for me that understanding came through my art. Creating has always felt like a form of meditation, something soothing for the soul." She emphasised that the project was about personal growth and creative joy rather than competition. Miss Vaughan said, "This was never about winning or losing. It was about the joy of creating something meaningful for an audience, and what an audience judges in the law courts. That sense of purpose has been hugely motivating for the children." The exhibition also supports the Know Thyself Charitable Trust, founded in memory of Miss Vaughan's son Tom. The charity encourages young people to develop self-confidence and self-understanding through creative expression. Each student received a certificate from the court. And this article is accompanied by a whole series of the portraits, including with Daphne and some of the judges standing next to them. And the portraits are clearly absolutely magnificent. There's one of Adam Carley with his portrait of a judge, and they are really a superb works of art with these portraits. And they will be on view. They're not actually on view at the moment, only to the judges and the legal people, but they will at some stage be open to the public as well, and well worth visiting.
New period drama filming starts. Film crews have set up for a week in Winchester to begin filming an exciting new period drama. A number of production vans and cars have set up outside the Hospital of St. Cross to begin the filming of what is being called a period drama. Various residents and passers-by have noticed a sign that has been erected on the entrance to the site stating that filming is in progress and visitor entry is prohibited. Lighting rigs, sound systems and blackout curtains have been put up around the perimeter of the building, though it is reported that much of the filming seems to be going on inside. A member of staff working on the site told the Chronicle that the project was a period drama about the reformation of a nun, and filming is expected to continue for the rest of the week. They said it would be on TV soon, but didn't specify where to find it. According to residents, flyers have been posted to neighbouring villages in the weeks preceding filming, calling for extras. And there's a picture of St. Cross with lots of cars and vans parked outside.
Conservation project on elm trees decimated by disease. Students are helping to shape a greener future by planting new trees. More than 20 Peter Simmons College students have taken part in a hands-on conservation project to plant mature, disease-resistant elm trees in the Owens Road campus. The project, part of the college's greening enrichment program in partnership with Hampshire Forest Partnership, will support biodiversity by restoring elm populations decimated by Dutch elm disease since the 1970s. Simon Beck, who led the project, said working with the Hampshire Forest Partnership has enabled our students to experience how local action can make a real difference out of the classroom. Losing just one type of tree can have a huge knock-on effect on wildlife. Since the 1970s, Dutch elm disease has wiped out millions of elms across Britain, leaving them critically endangered. White-letter hair-streak butterfly caterpillars rely almost entirely on elm trees as a food source, so restoring elms helps protect this threatened species. Students planted 20 mature elm trees and will continue to monitor their growth. The Greening Enrichment Programme forms part of the broader Peter Simmons Enrichment Programme, offering more than 200 activities to help students learn and contribute beyond the classroom. And there's a nice picture of students planting disease-resistant Dutch elms. It's noticeable that all the 10 students there are girls. Anyway.
And here we have Monument Restoration Moves Forward. Historic monuments restoration and repair works have taken a step forward, with its initial cleaning now finished. Work on Winchester's Buttercross began earlier this month, and colleagues from Winchester City Council, along with Councillor Martin Todd, leader of the council, were able to see the monument up close last week. Councillor Todd shared the experience with representatives from Stone West Limited, Philip Hughes Associates and Historic England. The monument is believed to have been commissioned by the Cardinal Beaufort, Bishop of Winchester, from 1404 to 1447. The Buttercross is a holy cross, although following its construction, the monument also served as a market cross, as butter, cheese and eggs were sold from the steps that surround it. And this is accompanied by Martin Todd and his team, who have been allowed to go up to the top inside the huge tent which has covered the Buttercross while it was being cleaned. But seeing the top of the Buttercross, it is now looking at it a beautiful, clean, creamy colour. It'll be lovely to experience it once the tent comes down.
Good neighbours honoured for support. A volunteer scheme has been recognised for its community support. Winchester Good Neighbours was praised at the Mayor's Community Awards for its work helping residents get to hospital or other medical appointments. With just 37 volunteers, the group were asked to provide 1,357 trips across the Winchester area last year. David Ball, chairperson of Winchester Good Neighbours, said, "We are delighted to receive the award in recognition of Winchester Good Neighbours' work in helping those with no family or friends to get them to and from medical appointments." The scheme was nominated for the award by Harry Michael, and it's accompanied by a picture of the mayor giving the awards to five of the volunteers.
New parish councils on the cards. Plans to establish new parish councils are moving forward following strong support from the community. Winchester City Council's Licensing and Regulation Committee has approved next steps to explore the creation of new parish councils for the Winchester town area and King's Barton, with a target launch date of April 2027. The proposals follow a recent community governance review and feedback from a public consultation. Not everyone is in support. Former Labour City Councillor Patrick Davis told the committee an unnecessary, confusing and extra largely powerless but wildly expensive parish council would be a total distraction when new unitary council is just taking on the joint responsibilities of the present city and county councils. The timing is also absurd, with the decision on the exact boundaries of the new unitaries due in a few days. Councillor Kathleen Becker Cabinet Member for Healthy Communities, said, "I'd like to thank residents, parish councils and residents' associations who submitted a response to our first consultation in this process. It's never been more important to hear the views of our residents, particularly in the light of local government reorganisation across the whole of Hampshire. This council is one which actively listens, and this has been demonstrated in these proposals which were agreed today. Parish councils play an important role in supporting our communities, and we have a duty to ensure that the governance arrangements for all our residents is effective, convenient, and reflects the identities and interests of its communities. Importantly, everyone will have the opportunity to once again take part in a further round of consultation, but we'll be particularly keen to hear from residents in Kings Barton and the unparished areas of Winchester Town, so they can help shape the future of where they live. More than 1,400 responses were collected during the initial consultation, with 86% of respondents in Winchester Town area backing the creation of a new parish council. Currently, this part of the district remains unparished. In Kings Barton, 50% of the respondents supported forming a new parish council, which would separate the area from the existing Headbourne Worthy Parish Council area. The City Council plans to launch a 6-week consultation in mid-May to gather further public input. Residents will be able to have their say on how any new council will be shaped. A final decision is expected later this year, and if approved, the new parish councils would be established on April 1st, 2027. Very good day to establish these things.
And here we have Rotary holds its annual lunch for senior citizens. An annual seniors' lunch saw 65 elderly people come together to enjoy food and entertainment. Winchester Rotary Club's annual senior citizens' lunch took place at Week Community Centre in Taplings Road, Week, on Saturday, March the 21st. The event brings together residents of various care homes from across the community to enjoy sandwiches, cakes, tea and coffee, as well as activities. This year, attendees could participate in bingo, watch a stand-up comedian and a dance demonstration, and see some traditional dancing from members of the Winchester's Ukrainian community. The organising of the event was spearheaded by Nick Bell, Winchester Rotary's Chair of Community Team. He said, "Well, it's an annual event that we do. I've had quite a bit of help from people here. It's a very important thing for the community. One of the things that we are still trying to do is to connect with the really lonely people in the community. It's very important that people in care homes are brought out. But my view is that we try to reach those who are isolated. It is difficult for anyone to contact them. To develop this in future, we would have to reach more people. We've got people here from one of the churches, St John's, so there are people here who are not in care home, but it would be nice to reach a few more." Nick said that the senior citizens' lunch has been going on for approximately 15 years. He continued, "Oh, this year's lunch is going well. This is the first time we've done it in this venue, and I think we've adapted well." Mark Butcher, president of Winchester Rotary, said, "We're really pleased with the event. It has a great atmosphere and everyone is very happy, especially since they get food. Quite a number of people said it was their second or third time, so that people want to come back is great." Also present at the event was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal. He said, "This is a great community event. They have taken the loneliness away, getting people together. The volunteers are amazing. It really brings the community together. You can really see it. People are talking to each other, and there is great community support." And this is accompanied by two photos of quite a few tables all sitting round with some young as well as the senior citizens, and with a most delicious looking lunch of sandwiches and cakes and scones and tea and coffee.
Young sloth moving to Marwell in breeding program. A young sloth is moving from Jersey to Hampshire as part of a breeding program. Marwell Zoo will soon welcome Gemma, a lion's two-toed sloth born at Jersey Zoo in January 2025 in the hope she will breed with resident male Santos. The move is part of a European Association of Zoos and Aquaria ex situ breeding program, with the pairing recommended by the scheme's coordinator. Native to the rainforests of South America, lion's two-toed sloths are under increasing threat in the wild due to habitat loss caused by urban development and human activity. In typical sloth fashion, her introduction to the zoo will be slow and gentle. Keepers will first introduce Gemma and Santos in a private section of their shared habitat, away from public view, to allow them to acclimatise. Once comfortable, they will gradually be given access to the tropical house. And there's a lovely picture of this sloth that actually was taken in Jersey Zoo with his mouth wide open. It's a beautiful, furry, creamy colour. It's lovely.
Hundreds gather to honour fantastic surgeon Merv. A memorial service for a renowned surgeon and cancer pioneer saw more than 800 people attend Winchester Cathedral to honour his legacy. Hundreds of friends, colleagues, patients and family came together to remember Myrddin Merv Rees, I can't pronounce the Welsh, founder of ARC Cancer Charity and pioneering liver cancer surgeon, at memorial service in Winchester on Friday, March the 20th. Mr. Rees died in November, aged 75. Some travelled from as far as America to honour his legacy as a cancer pioneer, rugby fan, singer and family man. The service included hymns sung by the choir of Winchester Cathedral, as well as a poem read by Merv's daughter, Victoria Hannah, a eulogy given by Alan Titchmarsh, a family tribute by Tom Rees, and an anthem sung by the Basingstoke Hospital Male Voice Choir, of which Merv was president. Tom Rees, Mr. Rees's son, said, "Growing up with Dad was so much fun. He taught his family what it means to be a good father. Dad knew two speeds, 200 miles an hour, and sleep. He was a mentor to many, not just at home, but at work too. He inspired his children and junior colleagues to achieve great things. He loved to laugh, and when going to the Principality Stadium, he loved to sing. Through his counsel, we have learned a deep sense of stability and contentment. His legacy will always be how loved he was by his family, and that will live through us forever." Excuse me. Mr. Rees, who was awarded the OBE in 2020 for services to liver cancer surgery, drove the technique of liver resection and carried out around 4,000 surgeries over his 38 years as a surgeon in Basingstoke. In 1987, Mr. Rees performed his first liver resection at Basingstoke Hospital, and on October the 13th, 2025, just weeks before he passed away, he carried out his last. During his career, the mortality rate for patients undergoing liver resection dropped from 20% to 1%. Alan Titchmarsh said, "Merv showed signs of talent and leadership from a young age, like when he was made head boy at his school. But family was always at the heart of his life. He showed huge pride for his children and grandchildren, and his family is a huge testament to his love and strength of spirit. Merv was in a way a magician, as far as I can see. His intervention taught fate the gift of patience, in many instances. He was also one of life's enrichers. His zest for life is something to emulate. But for all his great achievements, there are many he always regarded his family as of prime importance."
And here we have swooning over the best gelato I've had. A gelato shop in Winchester has seen huge success after officially opening its doors to customers. Swoon on Parchment Street, formerly known as The Hatch, opened on Friday, March the 20th, to queues of visitors, offering them free gelato as a welcome gift. The new shop offers a variety of authentic gelatos and sorbets, as well as gluten, vegan and dairy-free alternatives. They also sell fresh cannolis, macarons, gelato cakes and gelato burgers. The shop will sell 12 core flavours of gelato all year round, with two seasonal flavours which will change every 2 months. Swoon Gelato has expanded to Winchester, with branches already in Bristol, Wapping Wharf, Bath, Oxford and within Selfridges in London. The Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal, said, "What a sunny and joyous day. This business shows craftsmanship, quality and community spirit. It also has 100 years of history, which really shows the incredible craftsmanship. It has been a pleasure opening this family business." The business was founded by Anna and Bruno Forte, and it will be run by operations manager Josh Margeson. Anna said, "It has been a very successful day. We're so pleased. It's so nice to see so many people coming out at 10 o'clock. Usually gelato is eaten after lunch. We've wanted to come to Winchester for years, and we have finally found the best position where footfall is good. We're also on a street with other independent businesses, which is great. The idea is that people don't just have the gelato in the shop, they can take it away and enjoy the city." Swoon's open hours are currently 12 a.m. to 7 p.m, but the team are looking to push back the closing time on weekends. Winchester MP Dr. Danny Chambers said, "This is the best gelato I've ever had. It's absolutely delicious." The family-run business, founded by the Forte family, has drawn inspiration from their ancestors, Alfonso and Adelina Forte, who first introduced gelato to England in the early 1900s. And this is accompanied by a picture of a very happy-looking group, including the mayor and his wife, and MP Danny Chambers and another couple, all holding up their dishes of delightful gelato in front of the new grey Swoon building in Parchment Street.
$1.3 billion deal for combined authority. The creation of a new authority with the $1.3 billion investment fund for the region has reached a key milestone. Legislation was laid in Parliament on Monday, March the 16th, to allow the Hampshire and the Solent Combined County Authority to be established. Once set up in the coming months, the authority will have devolved powers from central government to focus on areas such as transport, skills and employment, housing and strategic planning and economic development. Councils will continue to run day-to-day services such as social care, waste management and road maintenance. Hampshire County Council, Isle of Wight Council, Portsmouth City Council and Southampton City Council are working together to finalise the operational framework for the combined authority. Southampton City Council leader Alex Winning said, "This is a landmark moment for our communities. By working together, we will take powers and resources out of Westminster to shape our own local future, drive economic growth and deliver real benefits for the people of Southampton and the wider region." Nick Adams-King, Hampshire County Council leader, said, "This important legislation now before Parliament will enable our region to shape its own economic priorities, giving us the powers and tools needed to drive growth and improve outcomes for local people. It presents a huge opportunity for local leaders, businesses and communities to work together to unlock our area's full potential." The combined authority will operate within a regional mayor, without a regional mayor until 2028, following the government's decision to delay the inaugural election for 2 years. Portsmouth City Council leader Steve Pitt said, "Today marks an important step in granting our region the powers and investment it needs to shape our own future. For Portsmouth, it will mean economic growth and new opportunities for residents and businesses. By working together, we can deliver real and lasting benefits for our communities. As reported by the Local Democracy Reporting Service, the devolution deal for the combined authority includes annual investment funding of $44.6 million a year for 30 years. The government is handing down 40% of the allocation, $17.84 million, for each of the 2 years before the mayor is elected. Phil Jordan, Isle of Wight council leader, said this strategic investment gives the Isle of Wight a once-in-a-generation chance to shape its own destiny.
£200 million invested in care support. A major funding boost has been approved to help residents stay independent and connected. Hampshire County Council has committed £200 million to adult day services which support more than 1,600 people across the county, including individuals with physical and learning disabilities, mental health needs and older residents. Councillor Zoe Huggins, Executive Lead Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said day services are a lifeline for many people in Hampshire, not only for those who attend, but also for the families and carers who rely on the respite they provide. This investment helps us provide, protect and strengthen services for the future, so residents can stay active, independent and part of their local community. The services are delivered through more than 80 independent providers and are mainly based in dedicated centres. They offer personal care, hot meals, creative and therapeutic activities and support with life skills. Some also provide vocational training to help people move towards employment. The funding, which is already included in the council's budget plans, will ensure these services remain high quality and sustainable. New arrangements for service providers are set to begin in summer 2026.
And now, go ahead given for plans to build homes at Village. Plans to build 14 homes in King Somborne have been given the go ahead after it received support from the Parish Council. Moon River Limited applied to Test Valley Borough Council for permission to build the homes on land at Spencer's Farm, Stockbridge Road. The application also covers the creation of an access road, drainage and landscaping, with the officer's report noting that four of the houses would be affordable. The application was brought before TVBC, that's Test Valley Borough Council, TVBC's Southern Area Planning Committee on Tuesday, March the 18th, where it received permission. Addressing the committee, Graham Searle, Chair of King Somborne Parish Council, said that the Parish Council backed the development. He said, "We are in support of this application. The original application we were against, but we have worked with the applicant and the agents to get something that we think is as close to the neighbourhood plan as we can get. I think it is detailed well in the officer's report. We're short of affordable homes in the area. Like most villages, it is difficult and we hope this will help." However, the plans did receive some objections from members of the public, with Alison Watkins and Richard Thompson, both of Muss Lane, voicing their concerns with the scheme. Andrew Morris of Moon River Limited urged the committee to permit the development, saying that it would address local need. In response to a question from Councillor Alison Johnston, Conservative for Mid-Test, about how the developer would minimise overlooking, Mr Morris said, "Well, as we progress up the side of the valley, we design the houses so that the heights could come up to 1.5 stories. The scale of the houses is kept for reserved matters, but we have given guidance for scale." He also admitted that the developer was yet to speak to King Somborne residents, but that he was too open to start a dialogue with them. Councillor Ian Jeffrey, Conservative for Mid-Test, said, "As some of the objectors have raised the point, I'm concerned about drainage and the state of the roads in King Somborne when it rains. I have had experience driving through it. There seems to be a permanent traffic light in the middle of the village. I know that this applicant has taken this issue seriously. I am in favour of supporting the parish council's view, so I will support this application. The committee voted unanimously to permit the scheme.
Council will continue on X. Hampshire County Council will continue using X despite admitting the platform has become a less pleasant and darker place. The issue was raised at a recent meeting where Liberal Democrat councillor Paula Ferguson asked whether the authority had considered withdrawing from the social media site, formerly known as Twitter, amid safeguarding concerns. She pointed to a growing number of councils stepping back from X, including Southampton City Council, which stopped using the platform in February 2025, following changes to its algorithm. Council leader Nick Adams-King said the council had not reviewed its position and added, although the Elon Musk-owned platform has become a less pleasant and darker place, that is not a reason for not using it.
850,000 pound fund for crisis support. A new support package has been launched to help households facing financial crisis. In Hampshire, £850,000 has been set aside as part of an early rollout of the Crisis and Resilience Fund, CRF, launched by the Department for Work and Pensions. The funding, announced by Hampshire County Council, is designed to support those who experience sudden financial difficulties and reduce the risk of repeated hardship. Councillor Zoe Huggins, Cabinet Lead Member for Adult Social Care and Public Health, said, "We understand that anyone can face an unexpected period of financial difficulty, and we want residents to feel confident that support will be there when they need it." The CRF replaces the Household Support Fund from April and will become the main source of local welfare provision, with Hampshire allocated £10.4 million for 2026 and 27. Councillor Huggins said, "This interim approach ensures continuity while we develop a strong, sustainable model for the future. I'm proud of the decisive action we are taking to support our most vulnerable residents. While a permanent scheme is being developed, the funding will allow Citizen Advice to deliver crisis payments and help residents build financial resilience. The County Council will also ensure crisis payments, will also issue crisis payments based on referrals from professionals."
And here we have a record for appointments. A record number of GP appointments has been delivered in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. In October 2025 alone, more than 1.2 million appointments took place, the highest monthly figure ever recorded in the two counties. That figure has remained consistently high into the new year. For the first time, the monthly average has now exceeded 1 million appointments. James Roach, Director of Primary Care and Local Care at NAH Hampshire and Isle of Wight, said, "The demand for primary care continues to grow, and our practices are responding by working more collaboratively than ever before. General practice today is delivered by a skilled multidisciplinary team, and that means patients can often be seen more quickly by the professional best placed to help them. As well as improving access, we are strengthening our focus on prevention, helping people stay well for longer and shifting our efforts from treating sickness to preventing it." He said the area was proud of the progress made and grateful for the public's willingness to embrace their new services.
String Orchestra helps with centenary celebrations. A night of classical music lit up St. Peter's Church as part of centenary celebrations. The concert took place on Sunday, March the 8th at the Winchester Church and featured a special performance by the Winchester Camerata. Organised by Claudine Keither, the event was described as beautiful and inspiring experience. Organisers also extended their thanks to Father Andrew Moore for bringing the Winchester Camerata to St Peter's Church. A spokesman for St Peter's Church said the concert was a beautiful and inspiring experience. The music created a journey through many of the moments that shaped life within the church. Through their performance, the orchestra captured the changing seasons, important liturgical celebrations, and the many emotions we share in our faith, from joy and celebration to reflection and quiet sadness. The Winchester Camerata, a string orchestra, was praised for their performance and the atmosphere they created. The spokesman said, "We would especially like to thank the wonderful musicians of Winchester Camerata, a talented string orchestra who treated us to a rich and varied repertoire. Their performance filled the church with warmth, beauty."
Minibus reconnects communities. A new minibus service is reconnecting residents to neighbouring communities after months of campaigning. The service, the result of sustained lobbying by the Knightwood and Valley Park campaigners, now links Knightwood and Valley Park with destinations including Chandlesford, Hiltonbury, Velmore and Eastleigh. Susan Dorset, originator and leader of the campaign group, said, "After many months of negotiations and hard work, we now have a minibus running up to six times a weekday, reconnecting Knightwood and Valley Park with other local communities. This is just the start of a long road ahead to establish fully accessible, proper public bus services that run at least 6 days a week, including evenings, to a regular, frequent and reliable timetable. Funded by a combination of parish councils, a government community grant and a contribution from the owners of Ampfield Meadows Retirement Village, the minibus will run for an initial two-year period. It does not replace the Stagecoach 46 and 461 services, which were cut last June and August." Mrs. Dorset said, "We still need direct services to and from our hospitals too. We have been told to use it or lose it, so please do support the service and publicise it widely." And there's a picture of campaigners protesting about the end of their bus services, walking along with wheelchairs.
And here we have plea over rain forecast icons. Theme Park, Paulton's Park and Marwell Zoo are among Hampshire attractions calling on the Met Office to change the way weather forecasts are displayed on mobile phone apps. More than 80 outdoor attractions in the UK have penned a letter to forecasters warning that misleading rain icons are costing venues thousands of pounds a day. They argue that a single rain cloud icon summarising a 24-hour period can imply a washout, even when much of the day is expected to be dry. Some report attendance falling by up to 30% following an unfavourable forecast. Posted on LinkedIn, Marwell Wildlife Chief Executive Laura Reed said the British public needed to be in possession of more accurate daily forecasting. She said, "I have walked round the zoo a lot today. I've easily clocked up my 10,000 steps and I have seen and heard so much activity along the way. And for 5 minutes of all the time I spent outside today, it rained."
Nursery to install 5 metre dome to connect children with nature. A nursery will be allowed to install a 5 metre high plastic dome that will help children to connect with nature. The plans submitted by Kids Love Nature Kindergarten were approved by Winchester City Council's Planning Committee on March the 11th. An olive-green geodesic dome and two composting toilet pods will be installed at a paddock on the approach to the Grade 2 listed Park Place Pastoral Centre, Winchester Road, Wickham. The children at the nursery have already been using the paddock and an existing polytunnel on the site for 2 years. A nearby resident named as Mr. Hudson in the meeting spoke to oppose the dome. He said, "The building is being built on a meadow which shouldn't be built on and shouldn't have a a school built on it. This company already has a building with toilets and facilities next to Park Place. A structure sympathetic to the surroundings would be more appropriate, such as a wooden English heritage building. It is unnecessarily overbearing in this environment. Wickham and Knowle Parish Council also objected, calling the dome excessively tall and potentially overbearing. Councillor Lorraine Rappe said this classroom design may be considered good elsewhere, but not in this locality. It is modernistic and would not be in keeping anywhere in the parish. Bearing in mind the children range from 9 months and with the old just 5 years, it is questioned why the classroom is such a height. Co-founder of Kids Love Nature Kindergarten, Alex Shepherd, said, "The dome seems like a small addition, but it's an incredibly important part of how we connect children to nature in the UK and the difference we can make to ensure their childhood is different from the one forced upon them by technology." Mr. Shepherd explained he has travelled to Poland to see domes in use. He said they are really breathable, they are just a really good space for young children to be in, and they are very adaptable. They just make excellent classroom spaces. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative, said, "I'm really unhappy about any development in the countryside, especially if it doesn't need to be there. This business promotes itself by saying it already has 3 indoor classrooms and an outdoor classroom on this site. So what possible justification could there be for having a 4th classroom, which will have an impact on the countryside?" Councillor Suzanne White Green welcomed the proposal, as her son had attended the same nursery when it was run by a different provider. She said, "They always make really good use of the grounds, and people are maybe misunderstanding the rural nature of it. It is semi-rural, I would say. The main building of the nursery use is quite old. There's not that much space for the children, so this would be a great addition to the space and be able to make more use of the paddock and the grounds."
Why is it easier to get active in the spring? Don't know. Longer spring days are giving Winchester residents fresh motivation to get moving, with local trainer Rich Maunders urging a focus on strength to support long-term health. For many residents, the return of daylight brings more than a change in the view. It also brings back motivation. Winter often leads to less time outdoors, disrupted sleep and a drop in activity levels. But local fitness professionals say that is not simply down to willpower. There's a real biological reason people feel different during winter, said Mr. Maunders of Dual Fitness Training on Worthy Lane. Reduced daylight affects the body's internal clock. It can influence sleep, hormone levels and even mood. When the days start getting longer again, the body begins to reset itself. This internal clock, known as the circadian rhythm, helps to regulate sleep and hormone release. Mr. Maunders stated that shorter days can keep levels of melatonin, the hormone that supports sleep, higher for longer, leaving people feeling sluggish. As daylight increases, energy often rises, sleep settles, and many find it easier to be active again. That makes spring a natural moment to rebuild healthy habits. While fitness is often associated with cardio or weight loss, there is growing emphasis on the importance of strength training, particularly from our 30s onwards. Adults naturally lose muscle mass over time, which can slow metabolism, weaken joints, and increase the risk of injury. In a city built on hills and historic streets, that strength is especially useful. From climbing towards the cathedral to tackling sections of the South Downs Way, good mobility helps residents continue enjoying Winchester's landscape well into later life. He recommends a steady approach, 2 or 3 strength sessions a week, combined with regular walking and a focus on consistency, not intensity.
And here we have historic chapter as police station reopened to public. A historic chapter has begun for policing in Bishop's Waltham after its police station was reopened to the public. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones and Chief Constable Alexis Boone cut the ribbon to reopen the front desk of the police station in Hoe Road on Friday, March the 20th. The opening of the counter will mean that residents will be able to visit the station to talk with officers, ask questions, get advice and help with the fight against crime. The Chief Constable said, "I think it is really important investment to make. It is a statement to the community that we're part of you, we're here and present, and we're here for businesses, to look after you, to work with you and to fight crime. It's a real signal of our commitment." Also in attendance was the Deputy Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jamie Scott. And it's just a lovely photo of the police line do not cross ribbon being cut by a beaming Chief Constable Alexis Boone and the Crime Commissioner Donna Jones in Bishop's Waltham.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet.